Hello and welcome to episode unknown of Untalented. This one's a bit of a different one because I'll explain via a bit of an introduction. I wrote a post on LinkedIn which came from a search that a client had sort of put me on to find them a female design director, which at the start of the process I thought was going to be simple but actually was more complex than I thought. And it kind of frustrated me because it appeared that there were lots less females in design, but also that accessibility for women in design was more difficult, and I was being very challenged to meet them. So I wrote a post which outlined a study's the findings were that 63% of the population of designers were women who got into the industry, and actually then only 10 or 11% were in leadership roles. So I wrote a post, there was lots of traction, and it led me to think, why don't we have a series of podcasts where I invite women in design to discuss some sort of quite pointy questions. So I'm looking forward to this. So we'll do some sort of small introductions, I guess. We've got Louise Jordan here. I don't know if actually the best way to introduce you is to ask you, who was the first person to make you feel talented?
Probably the first was my mother.
Yeah.
But I suppose more related to the industry that I work in was an amazing female teacher called Carol Whitworth, who was a sort of Geordie lass who, when I was 18 years old, kind of inspired me to do anything that I wanted to do. She still magnificently is working in the industry at the age of 65, has an agency down in Bristol. She's in a band called Doreen Doreen. She plays at Glastonbury. She does pop-up crab shacks, and really has been an absolute sort of guiding inspiration all of my life. And yeah. I guess the moment I kind of met her at a very young age of, 16, 17, that really kind of she showed me what a future could be. So yeah. I was really fortunate to have met her and, grown alongside her.
Amazing. And was that a powerful thing to have? Because we'll touch on this a little bit later, but a lot of women in design don't have a mentor or someone who inspires them who is a woman.
Yeah.
Do you think that was quite powerful at that stage of your career?
100%. And I think the earlier the better. Mm. I think when I then ended up at Camberwell, it was quite disappointing. There wasn't any female teachers. It was all kind of run by sort of institutionalised male teachers, which kind of crushed all of the stuff that I'd learned on my kind of foundation and all that sort of joy. So really quickly that moment can kind of go and capitalise on it. So, but having had her originally sort of from that age, I was able to just kind of get through my degree and then get into the industry as quick as I could. And actually my first boss was a female as well.
Okay,
she'd worked with Alan Fletcher at Pentagram. So I had a kind of lot of a Pentagram boost, but again, she'd left Pentagram because the opportunities for her at the time, there was a huge glass ceiling at Pentagram. So, she was a great first, another sort of great mentor. So I've been really fortunate and had two really sort of strong women in my very early career, which I guess absolutely helps shape and form you.
Yeah, great. Okay, and Titi.
Yes.
Obviously, your background is more in the kind of sneaker world. Who was the first person to make you feel talented?
It was definitely my childhood art teacher. I went to an art class when I was about 8 years old, and I think I was very much like a draftsman from a very young age, and my teacher pulled my mum aside and she was like, this isn't normal for an 8 year old. And my mum was like, oh my god. And like, it was just, I just knew I loved drawing and being creative all through school, and that was that she gave me that validation. But it's interesting what Louise was saying about her dreams being sort of crushed at that age, because when I went to university, I went to art school, and my fine art lecturers were all male, and they were all, it was things like, oh, why are you signing that painting, because you're not famous, like why would you do that? And the tutor that walked in the night before my degree show and was like, oh god, I thought you were going to do something better than this. And it's like these moments where it's like real confidence knocks. And I think and funnily enough, all of my female mentors through my life have been the ones that have given me that confidence back and sort of, yeah, led me and given me that light and yeah to look up to.
Well, maybe it's why you're both where you are today because of those early female mentors. Because yeah, I've had a few conversations just trying to fact find and get a bit of a lay of the land of this issue. And a lot of women who I've spoken to have never had, you know, a female mentor, even not even like a boss, but actually a mentor in the industry that they can go to and be like, oh, how do I manage this situation or how do I do this? So yeah, I think it's quite unique, both of your you know, the way you started and who made you feel talented. So I guess a lot of this series is going to be based around kind of female leaders and how, you know, that person got to that point, because I think there's lots of, you know, hurdles and things that you can trip over and that hold women back to get to that point. But I think it will be interesting to get both of your points of view, you know, from different points in your career. So in terms of leadership, can anyone be a leader?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. But again, I think that it's having the support and the kind of confidence to, you know, help grow you to become that leader. And also, I suppose, you know, what does leader look like? What is the shape of a leader? It's such such a male word, if I'm truly honest with you. You know, it's like leadership is, you know, comes in so many different forms. And the moment you say leader, it's sort of instantly, you're sort of categorising it as strong and powerful and all of this kind of stuff. But there's different kind of powers, there's different kind of strengths. And I think it's just a really narrow definition. Yeah. So I think, you know, people need to, you know, opening your eyes to the word leader and leadership and what that looks like. You know, there's some great examples, you know, fantastic. Jacinda, the New Zealand Prime Minister, who's just stepped down. I mean, you know, we see it all the time in the media. You know, what an incredibly powerful woman, and has sort of stepped down, and the misogyny and the hate and the vileness about this woman that actually led a country through, you know, the worst crises that we've all had. And I kind of, you know, you just look up to somebody like her and go, wow, what shaped you? That's leadership, yet it's torn down, you know. So it's a brutal place to be, because again, young women look at things like that and it all of a sudden becomes really unattractive. It becomes scary, and it becomes that, you know, you kind of have hate against you. So you know, it's a really complicated word, and it's a really complicated, you know, situation when you see things like that.
Do you think it's a personality traits that help someone be a leader?
I think like for me, I find obviously there's different types of leaders, but I found myself stepping into the role of a leader in sneaker culture, where I was able to step up and sort of harness my own confidence and beliefs, and amazingly had a huge group of women all around the world supporting me, and that to me is a leader. But for example, when I became a manager in my 9-to-5 job, I really struggled because I didn't feel like I had that respect, and as a result, because I'm not a very assertive person, I think depending on your personality type, it takes a strong person to kind of push back when you do have sort of younger staff members who undermine you or question you. So yeah, it's just depends.
Yeah, I think respect is a really good point, because actually then you have the confidence to feed back in a way that might potentially upset someone. You've got to be able to be like, right, I know this might upset you, but and that takes confidence. And I think if you're dealing with someone who's a bit more, you know, challenging, who doesn't have your respect, then it's more difficult, isn't it? And I wonder if that's kind of, and it's really interesting you say that, because actually when you've got a community, the respect comes and then your confidence is more, but then, you know, it's a different, I guess.
But just being put into sort of, I suppose, fairly traditional roles of management isn't necessarily, again, the best path to getting respect. Hearing your story about just sort of going out there, doing the work, proving it, you know, having a voice, that's where you get the respect, really, not from just sort of managing a bunch of people, which is, you know.
Do you want to speak a bit more about that, Titi? Because I know that you guys have chatted before the podcast started, but how do you want to speak about how you sort of built your community of I guess of females in that kind of sneaker community?
Yeah. So I mean, my career sort of started at ASOS, where I was working in social media, and I ended up having a very lovely female boss who put me. She knew I was obsessed with sneakers, and she promoted me to being the person that took care of all the sneaker content that went out on ASOS. So I got to work with all the big brands, and as a result, I was getting my hands on so much product and just had this obsession. And I started sharing it on my own Instagram account. And at first, sneaker culture was a very male-dominated space about 5 years ago. And I was too scared to post anything about sneakers, because I was like, if a man sees this, or someone scary. Who's a sneakerhead, and they question me, then I'll feel so embarrassed. And who do I think I am speaking about this topic, when actually it was a huge passion of mine. So so I just started to build up that confidence. I started to present a TV show, well, IGTV show on ASOS's Instagram about sneakers every week, and my confidence got up on the topic. And then I just started posting more about women in sneakers. I think it came to, I think it was when I first got my Nike shoe collab that I did, which actually came before I started really vocalizing these feelings, because it was through this program that they did where they chose 20 creatives to design a shoe, and I chose to do mine around women in sneakers. And my campaign basically had this graphic that was like, sneaker culture is often seen as a boys club, but we're changing that. And that just kicked off, because I was like, it was not just speaking from my point of view, it was all of our point of view, every woman in sneakers. And from there I then started posting other ones about women's exclusive sneakers and why they're not inclusive at all, and all of these graphics just started getting shared across the world. Like, one of them was shared, I think, like 10,000 times across every single country in the world, and it was crazy. And every single woman who has a passion for sneakers was kind of relating to it. And that's just kind of how I built it up. And then I've just kind of dedicated all of my design work and any collaborations I do towards that, because it's still such a, like, there's been huge change. I've been, you know, invited into Nike to like consult on women's product for upcoming years now, and they actually want to hear what we have to say, and that's a huge step forward. And there's much better representation, and we've together, I think, between myself and all the other women who have started speaking up about it, really made a change. So
what a story.
Yeah,
great one.
And what a platform, and what a platform you create. And I think that's what's kind of, you know, there are those opportunities where you can take it and sort of run with it. I mean, that's what's really exciting. And there's so many people out there, so many women out there that are going to, you know, back you and be prepared to kind of share and do. So that's pretty, you know, it's just, it is happening. All these things are happening. It's just hard work.
It's and such a shared experience, I think, for every woman.
And Louise, I think that obviously that this sort of question is sort of aimed at you, but in that kind of design and architectural space that you're working in now, obviously there's a significant fall from women who start off in the role and then women at your level. Why do you think that is?
I was thinking about this last night when you posed the questions, and I think there's kind of, you know, there's a bit of a triple whammy that women have in work. One being when you first start your career and you're kind of lumped in with everybody, and there is a bit of a glass ceiling, and actually trying to progress your way through fairly male-dominated industries is hard work. You know, I always call it, you know, you've got to have very sharp elbows at quite a young age, and that's tough. The second whammy is when women want to have children and want to kind of, you know, go on maternity leave, and then coming back into the world of, you know, design work, that often sort of strips out the next layer. And then the final layer is, of course, the menopause. And when women, I think there's something like over 900,000 women are lost, creative talent, design women are lost throughout the years because of kind of the menopause. And actually today the government have just turned down the first trial that they were going to try for menopause relief and work, and how you could do it, and literally the government have turned it down today. So, you know, we're constantly in this battle for progression, and we have a government that won't give any kind of, it's not mandatory for doctors to have to train to learn about the menopause. I mean, mind blown. Wow. So I think for women, there's three layers of things that you have to get through in your career. And I think trying to navigate that, which, you know, is doing so successfully, is it's really hard, you know, and it's really disheartening. And, you know, choices not to have children come with a load of baggage, and choices to have children come with a load of baggage. So, you know, I think it's, you know, it's threefold is hardcore.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that, you know, that they are quite significant milestones in your career as well, aren't they? Right at the start, right at the middle, and then towards the sort of latter end.
And each of them you have to tackle, and it's a, you know, it can be quite lonely. And the older you get, the harder it is. And I see that in the, I've kind of slightly sidestepped into the sort of architectural and interiors industry, and certainly in the world of architecture, there are very, very few females at the top there. Yeah. You know, and it's sort of almost more stark than the design industry, how fewer sort of females there tend to be.
This is kind of a controversial question, I think, but I'm going to ask it. I was speaking to another female leader, and I think that TT was speaking earlier about like the community and support. But when this creative director was speaking, that she didn't have that much support by other women as peers. You know, they almost would tread on each other's toes, and it felt like once you were in the club, you didn't have to have anyone else's back. Have you experienced anything like that?
No.
I
think, I mean, you know, I'm sure things like that go on. That's just humans though, isn't it? And I think, you know, it's easy to find a story like that. No, not at all. And you find a way, you know, you find a way through it. I think there's a bigger issue, which is the more kind of older, the what I see is the people's networks, they become more closed. And I think that's the thing that needs to be kind of unlocked. Actually, your sort of network that you've bought, so alongside mentorship, the networks that you create, I think they're the things that you need to share. And actually opening up those opportunities, that's where it's, who can I introduce you to? How can I get you into that world? So there probably are examples, of course there are, but you know, I don't think that's a kind of a big deal actually.
Well, that's good, more positive than that conversation, the other conversation that I'd had. And in terms of challenges, TC, I want to ask you this one. What could you describe any sort of challenges or hurdles that you've faced that you feel is quite associated with being a woman?
Yeah, I think, obviously I spoke about management, and my employees were male, and I felt like there was just this lack of respect, which I really struggled with. But then also just, I think confidence and imposter syndrome come from that. And when you have that from sort of your junior employees, but then also your boss maybe isn't promoting you or giving you the respect that you deserve, or the growth that you deserve, all of that really like plays into confidence and imposter syndrome. And I think I experienced that quite a lot in my career. And then I think in sneaker culture, outside of the sort of professional world, you still get that because men constantly write on your Instagram posts, like they'll constantly comment saying, how do you know anything? Or you're just into sneakers right now because it's cool, or because it's for Instagram. You don't actually know this, this and this. And it's just this constant undermining. And I think that's what I've experienced the most.
Chipping away, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's actually more the low level these days rather than the sort of super obvious stuff. It's just that that's the stuff. And I think the problem is that social media, you know, those platforms are troll central, really. Aren't they? And that's awful. So you've got to learn, then there's a new skin you've got to grow,
exactly.
Which is how not to kind of let it get to you. And
it's crazy. Brutal. I think the people that write it don't realize that there's someone on the receiving end of it.
Yeah, I know,
the time.
It does feel like that.
Because there's been
yeah.
times when people have, men have written stuff on my Instagram, and I usually don't respond because I just don't rise to it. But if I've ever responded with anything, they'll then message me privately and be like, oh, I'm so sorry, I didn't realize you'd see that, and all this stuff. And I'm like, why would you write it then?
It is
the chipping away. And I think, like you said, it's low level. I think there's a lot of unconscious bias, and that's what I found is a huge issue, because you're not outrightly doing anything specifically bad to women, but it's all these like little behaviors and the way you say things, and it does chip away at you, and it's
I think some of that as well is, it's not that, you know, a ton of guys, men that I know, are absolutely as horrified as women are about the sort of the situation, but I think so many people just talk about it. I was reading something the other day, and it was the nicest story I've read this week, but a tiny little column on the, you know, the BBC's news site is the Welsh football team. I think the guys took a 25% drop in pay, and the women have taken a 25% rise in pay. Oh, so nice. It's the sweetest story, because it actually is a real example of, we literally will put our money where our mouth is. Hmm. I didn't hear that story this week. I mean, you sort of have to go finding it. Yeah. And all you're hearing about is sort of white male privilege with tax problems, mm-hmm. and, you know, whatever. So actually, where there are gems of stories as well, they're just kind of suppressed.
Yeah.
So I think, again, those little moments of things that really can have a massive positive change, because it's like, you know, talking about the women lionesses, it's like, oh, hooray, isn't it great for women? Well, nobody did, and nobody's done anything about it.
Yeah.
Whereas the Welsh guys have just taken a pay drop. Yeah. I mean, they've matched, levelled everybody up immediately. I mean, it's so inspiring.
And as you were saying about the New Zealand Prime Minister, like, a lot of the press and media wasn't that positive about that. That was frontline headline news, but it was quite...
That's not even unconscious bias. Yeah. That's just damn right.
Yeah.
Straight out of vileness.
And in terms of like challenges from as a leader, what sort of challenges do women face that men don't face as a leader, do you think, or someone managing, you know, people? Or
I think it's just back to that sort of slightly constant chipping, you know, chipping away. We have, I mean, the company that I work for is pretty progressive, and it is amazing, but there's an awful lot of co-leaders, which I think is a really good thing on the positive side. It's like, it's a, you know, often they're big jobs and two heads are better than one, but it does always worry me that a woman can just do this as well on her own. So, you know, there's just lots of signals, I guess, where it's like you can sort of stand that. But I think it's just the general sort of, it's like chipping, you know, chipping away, not necessarily always being in the room, not necessarily, you know, and just... Yeah, it's just sort of, it's a constant. And I think the problem is you just get used to it.
Yeah.
I think that's the thing. And then you sort of, when you stop and discuss things like this and read your article, and I was just saying, you know, the moment you take some of the threads from the LinkedIn post and you go deeper and deeper, you just go, the noise, it's a cacophony of everybody, you know, pretty much everybody saying the same thing.
Absolutely. And very few comments from men.
Yeah.
Very few.
Well, it's probably a fairly scary arena, I say, to sort of step into, isn't it? But that goes back to put your money where your mouth is, you know, point. It's great to talk about it, but what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And I think that sort of drop off from sort of junior female talent into leadership, it's going to be a hard question, but what can be done to sort of give more opportunities to actually reach that level for women, do you think?
I think more female mentors and more representation of women in those positions, because you don't really see them, and especially in sneaker culture, for me, it was, I remember I was nearly in tears when they brought on one of the first female sort of heads of, because I was like, thank God, such an emotional, because she was this amazing powerhouse, and I just couldn't believe that finally we had someone to look up to that understood what we'd all been kind of going through. And I think it's just still such a rare thing. And I think, like you said, just more coverage of it. And
And I think there's fundamentally some structural things to do with the way that business is formed and the way that business is run. You know, design agencies are based on time cards and time systems and working 40 hours a week and 5 days a week. I mean, it's so antiquated. You know, there's a kind of, I think, I love there's that trial of 4 day weeks, which is great.
Yeah.
And I think, again, he's proving really successful. But I think there's some real fundamentals for how you charge for your services. I mean, is really by an hour the best way for your contribution sort of creatively to be seen or done or be productive? It feels really no is my, you know, is my answer to that. So I think there's some fundamental structural things in an industry that that is actually quite old school,
yeah,
and is still behaving in a very old, antiquated way from the sort of 50s. You know, it still follows models of lawyers and, you know, punching in and timesheets. I mean,
yeah.
You know, yeah. So I'm sure there are better ways that we can figure out how we can charge for the kind of, you know, the inputs that we have and the, you know, the things we bring together. So.
Yeah. I was actually chatting to my mum about this over the weekend because she, you know, as you do, and she worked in the healthcare space. So she ran an organisation which sort of did midwifery and that sort of stuff. And some contracts they have, they'll shorten the amount that you would work per year. And then what they'd bring in would be contractors to cover, like, school holidays, for example. Why don't we do that in this industry?
Yeah.
Like, we have lots of freelancers. You could quite easily reduce someone's contract to 10 months or something,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, 9 months, and then utilise the, I don't know how many days kids get holiday, but that's a big blocker for...
Crap policies that have been written and sort of tweaked over the decades. Nothing has changed.
Yeah.
You know, and the problem is that agencies, of course, are fearful then of changing their model because every other agency does it. You know, it's
it's not good enough, really. On the flip side of that, leadership usually means client contact, doesn't it? You get to that point where you're presenting lots to clients. Is there like a gesturing thing that people, you know, oh, you can't do this because you need to have lots of contacts with clients and you need to be available when they are? Do you think that's something that happens?
If possibly, but that's again rubbish. Yeah. I mean, clients are human, right? Yeah. I think people work around. I mean, again, what is it that you're creating and what is it that you're delivering? Mm. However you're delivering it and creating it, you kind of come to an agreement with your client. And if you're not allowed near the client and that, you know, that limits your restriction, then yeah, you are being held back. Because actually you need to get as close to the client as quick as you can to really understand kind of the issue. And I mean, that goes back to a bit that sort of networks that you owe, you know, is that if people are kind of putting their arms around the clients and not letting you near to them, then that's an issue.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. And I was speaking to another sort of MD of a branding agency who was a female, and she was very passionate in saying that, you know, what we often have to bring male designers back and say, you know, you're presenting with too much bravado. You're actually not quite as good as you think you are.
Right.
And the complete flip side with female designers at the start of their career, you're far better than you think you are. You need to present this with more confidence. Do you think that's a consistent issue?
Yeah, and I think not letting, as well, the more junior you are, get them in front of a client as quick as possible. I mean, even if it's watching in, it's like, why does it have to be this sort of closed off thing? Mm. I mean, there's a fantastic female leader at Gensler who heads up our retail department, a lady called Lara Morano, and she absolutely has all of the juniors in on pretty big conversations as well. And it's like, how else are they going to learn? Mm. So how else are you going to keep that? So you can also see style. So there's sort of mentoring in a quiet way, and then there's mentoring in a bigger kind of environment. How else are you going to see the nuance of presenting or reading the room, or, you know, all those kind of things that, you know, really make up successful kind of relationships with your clients? Yeah.
And Titi, do you think it's a confidence thing that holds some women back?
Yeah, 100% imposter syndrome. And I do see, I've worked with many sort of men in my career. Obviously, so many have been absolutely lovely and really good at what they do. But there's always the odd one who's doesn't do the work and then speaks louder and and blames everyone else. And then I found that often I feel that blame and I'm like, is it my fault? Am I? And even though it's nothing to do with me, I sit and think, like, did I not give them the tools to do their job, or was it, did I do something wrong? And they've got a very good way of sort of doing that in such a confidence, bravado, audacity kind of way that you don't question them until afterwards, and then you're like, wait, that's not right. But yes, I constantly have done that in my career and like questioned myself and not had the confidence to speak up, even when I know I've been going above and beyond. And
do you think that's getting better? Do you think you're sort of as you're?
Yes. Yeah. Funnily enough, since I've gone freelance, I've realised the skills that I have much more, because I'm working with people who have immediate respect for me and my work. Whereas I think when I worked in a very male-dominated role in a 9-to-5, it was constantly questioned and undermined. And yeah, it's funny, it's flipped on its head because I've sort of taken that power back and realised how much, just how much experience I did have and how capable I was. So yeah, so now I'm, yeah, it's great. It's, I don't experience that anymore.
And I guess you know you're being brought in to be an expert in something rather than you know, existing in a room, you know, which is kind of interesting. And it's, again, hard question. All of these are quite difficult to sort of tackle. But what can agencies do on this topic? Like, is there one thing that they can do, or businesses?
Well, I guess we've sort of touched on it. There's multiple things. I don't think there's one thing. I think, you know, we've been through the sort of gender pay gap, still ongoing, things are slowly, I mean, it's glacial, right? I mean, there's so many things that can still keep happening, but I think you've got to look at properly the structure of the business. I think you've got to look at the three stages of women entering, the, you know, the maternity and the menopause, and I don't think any of those are particularly, I mean, still maternity's a mess. Menopause hasn't even been thought about, quite frankly. So I think there's not one thing. I think the reality is there's multiple things, and I think multiple strands of a pretty, it's not that complex. It's just it's just sort of slightly mind-blowing that it takes so long.
Yeah, and I think it would, what would help is having more women in leadership positions where they're pushing this stuff, you know, to be able to be like, right, everyone's talking about this so much, let's actually do something about it. Mm-hmm. So I think if there's...
Back to our Welsh footballers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Put your money where your mouth is. Don't just talk about it.
Yeah.
Put women on the board. Put women in leadership teams and don't expect them to behave like men.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, that's another thing, you know, in conversations that I've had. It's women sometimes feel like they've got to over-egg the sort of, you know,
which I think might go back to the comment about women when they get into those positions can be quite tricky. I think that is the flip side of it, is that it's a total overcorrection and overcompensation, because actually to live in those worlds or to exist successfully in those worlds, they feel that they have to behave like that. So I think that comment is just is a result of the behaviours that they're sort of dealing with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, to fiercely, almost aggressively
go for it and perhaps again back to the point about don't read the room. You know, that's not that behaviour is not required, and it's not helping, you know, grow the situation.
Yeah, and I think that it, again, in some conversations that I've had, you know, men can be very over, you know, aggressive in those moments, swearing, throwing stuff around, but actually that's just them being passionate.
Yeah, right.
And then,
I mean, I suppose at least we don't live in the sort of work in the food industry.
Yeah,
which, you know, true. I mean, it's just sort of weird behaviour, isn't it? And it's that, I mean, what worries me is that, you know, you're hearing an awful stories, that hideous Andrew Tate guy, there's so many good things going on in schools to try and counterbalance it, but actually there's another generation of young guys coming through that... I mean, so when wave upon wave, each generation, there comes another whole set of things. So that we're not going to see, if that's not being nipped in the bud, which in certain areas it is, of course it's not. You've just got another generation sort of coming through. So, you know, that's really disheartening, isn't it? And I'm horrified I said his name, because he's getting way too much.
I think there is such more responsibility does need to be placed on, like, men and like their role in all of this and educating them, because I feel like there's so many men like who are amazing and great allies and they want to do more, but they're, like we spoke about earlier, they're almost afraid to say something just in case they say the wrong thing, and then that silence is even felt, even though they do maybe have righteous feelings and whatnot. But I think there needs to be more active responsibility from men. I think even looking at the other day, I was thinking about how all of my role models or people that I look up to in the sneaker industry are men, and it's just because they get more airtime. They are, I mean, they're amazing, they're great at what they do, but for every sort of 10 men that I look up to, there's maybe like 2 women who are in those positions, and I don't know any men that look up to women in the same way that I've looked up to these designers in the space. And it's kind of like, I'd love to see more of that and more celebration of female talent in general from men. And it seems like something so small, but I think just hearing that is so powerful. Yeah. Coming from them, yeah.
Well, there was that amazing campaign, wasn't there, which was like the most uncomfortable thing to watch, where this girl was getting like catcalled, or like there was this guy kind of intimidating her, and then no one said anything, and it was like this really horrible like sort of major, and then they sort of rewound it, and one of them said, mate, don't do that, like, and it changed the whole dynamic of the moment.
Yeah,
and it leans back into what you're saying, actually. The silence is almost the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, deafening, isn't it?
It's
but again, I think it's about not necessarily being equipped with how to have those conversations or how to enter those conversations. You know, and that, I suppose I was just thinking as well, what we were saying about, yes, female mentors, and as you enter the industry, but we started on the education piece, and I wonder if there's still a bit of a gap. I haven't checked in, but you know, who's doing those sort of foundation courses, those creative courses, and I wonder if there's not many people there, because it's not necessarily seen as such a great industry. The pay's pretty crap. I mean, maybe the holidays are quite good, but I wonder if it's worth just checking that out, because it's almost like you've got to go back a few paces, haven't you? And, you know, great female women leaders in schools and, you know, all that way sort of through to really prepare those conversations.
No, it's right. It's, and I guess prepping people very early in their career about these sorts of things as well. You know, having conversations, you know, whether an internship group gets this, this is a discussion piece. It's not just swept under the rug. You know, let's talk about this. These are our policies. You know, we've got X, Y, Z. This is to protect these people. This is to protect these people. I think that would be like a quite an interesting thing to sort of bring in.
At ASOS, actually, that was when I first started there. They did so much of that. I don't know if they still do it, but there was like unconscious bias training, which was so helpful because everybody was, you had to sit through it, you had to learn, and it was just certain things that people just aren't aware of. And they, it was just that, even things like that would help so much. But yeah. I don't think that happens in many workplaces.
No, I really don't think so. I don't think so either. I think brands do it much better, actually. I think agencies don't really do it very well, you know, and maybe slightly more corporate organisations. But there's even more these issues in that kind of industry. Okay, we've kind of reached, we've got about 5 minutes left. So I don't know if you guys read the last section on the agenda. It's kind of a weird one. It's called Elephant Vomit. I say this every time. I don't know really why it, we called it that. I think it was based from Elephant in the Room, but it's basically something that you don't like or dislike that you bring. The example that I always give is I don't like melon.
Okay.
Don't know why. It's, everyone's like, what, every melon? I'm like, yeah, every melon I'm not the, really that fond of.
Really?
Yeah, see, everyone's always really surprised. I'm not, I don't know, it's the, maybe the texture or taste. And the other one, mine's very food related, but the other one is like world buffet restaurants.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's like if a restaurant has 80 different cuisines,
I'm probably going to
avoid that. But yeah, who wants to kick us off with their... It's like room 101, basically, is what we're trying to achieve it.
Vaping.
Oh, vaping.
Standing behind people with vapes that have those... Oh my God, like strawberry flavour or rhubarb and custard flavour. It's the most air pollution. It's just gross. Yeah. Stop vaping.
I heard someone call it a mouth fedora, which I thought was quite funny.
It's a horrible thing in the street when you're walking behind.
Yeah, it is quite impressive how much...
It is,
like some of those massive ones, how much pink. Like it's an entire cloud.
You get a whole mouthful of it as well, walking past. You're like,
deeply uncool.
Okay, so vapes has been brought. TT, have you got anything?
I feel like mine's not that fun now, because I thought about it and I was like, I don't know if there's anything I like hate that much, but I was just going to say imposter syndrome. I think that is like the killer of so many people's confidence.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's one of my things. I try to stay positive as much as possible about stuff. But
what do you think you can actually do? What is the, because everyone has it, whether you like to admit it or not, everyone has that kind of imposter syndrome thing. Is there any positives about it?
I mean, it keeps you on your toes. Yeah. It keeps you hungry. It keeps you wanting more. It keeps you discovering more. It's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And it happens forever as well. Please don't.
Never goes away.
Please don't ever think that the more senior you get, in fact, it kind of becomes more acute.
Yeah.
And the anxiety that comes, it's like, surely I'm going to be found out now.
Yeah.
But it is. It's a really uncomfortable. I think you've just got to, like, sit in it. You know, you've got to live it. You've just got to know that you are where you are because of all the really good things that you've done. And, and kind of be good to, you know, be kind to yourself and meditate a bit on it.
Yeah. And I guess it does. It pushes you to be better than you actually need to be, probably, as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which is good. And I think if you didn't have it, it'd probably be quite worrying, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
It's fine, I've got this. I know exactly what I'm doing.
It's a horrid feeling. I totally agree with you.
Yeah.